Welcome to the Mindful Moments for Families and Schools podcast. This is Kelly Winkler, your host. If you are a parent or a teacher who would like to have a more peaceful, calm, and centered environment, then you are in the right place. In this podcast, we will learn to weave yoga and mindfulness into your daily routines to help both you and your children be able to regulate your emotions, feel connected, and be resilient. I'm excited to share these incredible tools with you, so let's get started. Welcome back to Mindful Moments for Families and Schools. This is Kelly. Today, I am so excited to have on Nikki Hedstrom. Nikki is a first-time author from Vancouver, BC, Canada, with a passion for helping people and creating change. She has been working in advertising industry for the past 15 years, creating immersive brand experiences using interactive displays and meaningful dialogue to engage and shift minds. She has leveraged this skill to help make the discussion about thoughts tangible and to create activities that help households reduce anxiety. Her methodology and concepts stem from the work of Eckhart Tolle, Brené Brown, Don Miguel Ruiz, Maya Angelou, Jen Sincero, and Stoicism, along with many others whose mission and work is to reduce human suffering caused by our thoughts. I'm really excited for you all to hear this conversation with Nikki. She has written a wonderful children's book that's called A Thought is Just a Thought. And I'm just excited for you to learn about this book and how you can utilize it as a tool either at home with your children or in your classroom. And she has so many insightful things to tell us about her techniques and what she included in the book. So let's get to it. Welcome, Nikki. I'm so excited to have you on.
Oh, Kelly, thank you so much for inviting me. I'm so excited to talk about this with you.
Yeah, let's get started by just talking. Introduce yourself. Tell us about you and your journey and how you came to find tools with your own anxiety.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So for as long as I can remember, I've always been a bit of an anxious child. And so, you know, it's taken a lot of work over the years. As I got into my older years, I did things like therapy and really discovering different tools and tactics that could help me as an adult cope and better manage with my anxiety. And so over that time, I really started to do, you know, therapy. I got some introductions to cognitive behavioral therapy, which I love, and actually is a big part of why I ended up writing a book. So I'm here to sort of tell you a little bit about that, but my journey. And so as I was sort of working through some of the things that I found helpful, like breath work and just in general being more present in my life, I just realized what an amazing gift would it have been to me as a young girl had I had some of these tools that I now have as an adult to be able to use to help regulate my own anxiety. And so out of that idea was born a book, a children's book that I have titled A Thought is a Thought, with the idea of introducing to kids that, you know, thoughts are just thoughts, and that when we are having a negative one, that we can actually take some time to think about it, question if it's even true, and then look to see if, when possible, to choose a more positive thought. And so by sort of practicing that in my own adulthood, I realized I could have shortcutted a lot of, as I like to call it, like unnecessary suffering, because when it comes to anxiety, we're so often just worrying about the past, or we're worrying about the future and stuff that actually isn't currently happening in the present. And we just create a lot of extra pain for ourselves. And so my hope was that if I could introduce this concept and get kids thinking in sort of the method of cognitive behavioral therapy, where if we can shift the thought, we can shift the emotion that's attached to that thought, which then can shift the action that's attached to that thought. So by being able to do that and start to build those building blocks and get kids to understand that, like, you know, thoughts are just thoughts, the way that we understand that a triangle has three sides, that we would actually be able to hopefully reduce a lot of unnecessary suffering. So that was my motivation to write the book. And it's the kind of stuff like these lessons and reminders, even as adults, are so important because we can get lost in our own minds thinking about, you know, whether or not we had a, maybe a meeting with our boss and we didn't feel like it went very well. Maybe we didn't think we said things right. And so we can really overthink that and we get into those negative feedback loops. And so the main refrain of the book is a thought is a thought. It's not me. It's just not. And what I wanted to do is just that have that mantra, sort of that earworm to remind us that like when we get those sticky negative thoughts that start to circulate in our brains that we just can't can't break out, that we can just remember like, right, I'm having a thought. I can choose another one, maybe one that makes me feel better. And just being aware that that is, that thoughts are thoughts and that we can just sort of let them float by, get curious, examine them, pick another one. Like all of those things are so helpful. But I think until you sort of have that information, those thoughts can just wash over you like a tidal wave, right? Mm. Particularly when they're negative. And so I just wanted to try to do what I could to get kids to be curious about it. Like the more you can sort of engage with how thoughts make you feel, the more self-aware you can be around that. And so it was important to me to be able to provide some tools for parents and kids to be able to have these conversations.
Oh, I love it so much. I mean, first of all, thank you for sharing your story. I can 100% identify with you. I was that anxious kid. I was anxious about talking to people and things if I said the wrong thing and all of those negative thoughts. And it took me until I was a parent and I started parenting an anxious child of my own to really learn these skills. So I too always think about, oh, if I had had these tools back when I was a kid, same thing. A lot of pain and suffering could have been avoided. And the same for my daughter as well. We really, it took us quite a while to finally get her officially diagnosed when she was 12 and start cognitive behavior therapy and then start utilizing all of these mindfulness practices. And it certainly changed my life. And this whole idea with a thought is just a thought. I mean, I love it. I love that's the title of the book. And I love the whole concept of it because I just think it is so, so powerful for kids, but even adults. There are adults out there that haven't learned this yet either, you know, and I think it's just a powerful concept for people to learn that, you know, you are not your thoughts. And just because you think something doesn't make it true and all of that. So it's just so wonderful. And it's something that I still work on every day. And I know that, you know, even my kids who aren't quote unquote diagnosed with anxiety or students that I work with, they struggle with negative thinking. And, you know, it's something that everybody struggles with, I think, in some form or another. So it's really, I'm excited to even dive in more with you about this. Because again, I love it so much. Well, it's so important. I know you just kind of mentioned that refrain of the book. Is there any other part of the book that you like quote from the book that you want to sort of read and dive into a little bit deeper?
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to talk a little bit about my thought around the fact that when you're an anxious child or anybody really with anxiety, and I'm sure anybody who's listening who had anxiety has had somebody tell them like, oh, well, just don't worry about that. And, you know, especially as parents, it can be exhausting if your child is consistently worried about things that aren't likely to happen. It can be hard to figure out how to navigate that. But for me, it was important that the way that I set up the book is about recognizing the emotion and recognizing the thought and then empowering the child to do the work themselves. So I'll say that in the sense that yes, a parent, like this book is meant to be a conversation and a parent to be there to help through. But the goal is that you start to be able to regulate yourself, because I think the power that comes from being able to sort of recognize our one, like you said, like a thought is like thoughts are just thoughts, like a thought is a thought. But to actually be able to start to question those thoughts. And so I think the challenge is especially when I'm sure when we were growing up, there just wasn't this type of conversation happening, this sort of level of mindfulness that we could incorporate into our kids' lives. And so what I like about the book is that it's building the blocks that the kids can have their own self-regulation tools. And so I'll go through the thought exercise, which I really love, but there's four questions that I think if we teach these questions early and they become a habit to be able to question, you know, as you move into adulthood, I think you would really, again, come back to that, like reducing that pain and suffering by being able to choose more positive thoughts. So I'll go through the questions. The first one is, what is the thought that you're having? So it seems like a silly, it's so obvious, but I'm like, sometimes we just don't even like, don't even sit down to think about it. Like, what am I even thinking? You know, we just let those thoughts race by. So if a kid is upset, it's good to sort of check in, like, what is the thought that they're having? How does that thought make you feel? And so that can be about engaging with them. Like, do they feel butterflies in their stomach? And then also you can even just talk about the emotion. Am I feeling sad? You can do all those different pieces with them to see, like, how does it feel in their body? How does it feel? Like, what emotion would they associate with it? And then the next question is, do you know if that thought is true? Now, this one's a hard one in the beginning for anybody to sort of get past, because we like to just think that, and especially when we're upset, we like to be like, no, I know. But what's good is, like, a parent can probe to ask more questions, like, well, do you really know? Like, is there no other, you know? And maybe it might need, for the first little bit, a parent to help come up with some imaginative ideas of what another scenario could be to get them started. And then the last question is, if you could choose another thought, one that might make you feel better, what would it be? And what I love about this question is that it's not saying you have to choose another thought. It's not like, if they're not in an emotional state too, that's okay, you know, but if you could, it gives that opportunity and the encouragement for them to think, can I rise to the challenge of thinking of another thought? And so again, it's empowering the child to work through this practice versus the parent guiding the conversation and saying, you know, you're scared of, for me, I'll say, like, when I was a child, I was scared of fish, like, well, the fish aren't going to hurt you. Well, I didn't really do it. Like, it never really got rid of that fear, right? I wasn't doing the work to help back that up. So I think when you are able to walk through it with them, that empowers them to make another choice if they can. And so the goal is that they start to make this a habit of that idea of, like, being almost like a detective, like getting curious. And I like the example, and like in the book, I have the character thoughts are represented as these balls with multi layers, because I do feel like often almost like a ripple effect, when you drop one thought, it's like they can ripple out into a series of other like-minded or similar thoughts. And so I wanted to have a stage where the character can calm their mind. They're actually able to hold like one thought in their hand and either be quite confident or even curious about that thought. So that gives us a space to be able to think a little bit more about, like, what is that thought and what am I having and how can, and is there a more positive one to have? And I know there's a lot of talk right now about toxic positivity, and I'm mindful about that as well, which is why I wanted to include within the book, you know, naming the emotion that matches the feeling, because all feelings are valid, right? We're not always going to feel one thing. I think it's important that we recognize there's a whole spectrum. And of course, as parents, and even as humans who are living in this life, like, we always would prefer to be in a happier state. So the goal is to shift to a better space. That might be a leap and bound in a better direction, or it might be an inch towards a better direction, but all, like, the hope is to sort of shift that thinking into a better place. And so it's a sliding scale. And I think it's important to recognize that, like, I think all feelings are valid, and we don't want to be, you know, not acknowledging our child's feelings, because that is also really important. And I know, again, that it's that validation, it's that active listening, it's the checking in with your child to see, like, how are they feeling? Are they feeling overwhelmed? Are they feeling angry? Can you get to the bottom of that thought? And then, as we know, as you uncover some of this, sometimes, like, anger is really hurt, right? Like, it's disguised as something seems like it's anger, but it's really that they are feeling like they need more love. And so I just think the conversation around families talking about emotions and kids learning to some of these tools that will be helpful to help self-regulate all move us towards one, a more, like, mindful and more present society. But if we can get this right at the early ages, again, I'm like, then when they come against bigger challenges as they get older, they've got some tools to be able to really reflect on those thoughts that they're having.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to all that you just said. I'm like, my brain is firing on so much that I wanna go back to. I mean, I'm gonna start with the piece about validating is so important. And I know it's really hard for parents To be able to do that, especially when you have an anxious child. Like I think about my childhood and I had wonderful parents. But as a very socially anxious child, I know how incredibly frustrated my mom must have been because every place we went, I just hung on her. And we would go places as families, and all the kids would be off playing, and I would just be at my mom's side. And I know she wanted to be with her friends and be just talking with the adults and have her time, and and it was really hard, but she kept sort of, encouraging me and pushing me off, go play with the kids, go play with the kids. And I, had this overwhelming sense of anxiety and fear about that. And, although she didn't mean to, her just saying, "You're fine, go, you're fine, go," was really difficult for me. And it took me then a long time into my adult years to really believe that my feelings were valid. Because I learned as a kid that what I was feeling was not valid, and she wasn't meaning to do that. She was encouraging me to go and be with the kids, and she wanted that for me, and she wanted her time with her friends, which again is all very normal, but I think it's a really important piece for parents just to take that moment and just ask those questions, because that can really affect the rest of your child's life, and if, especially if it's something that they struggle with over and over again. So that's one piece that I
Absolutely.
love.
Absolutely. And I think it's the kind of thing that seems really innocent, particularly when it comes to anxiety and saying, oh, like, oh, don't be silly. Don't worry about that. Like, that's never going to happen. It's essentially, and for the child who's experiencing it, it's like, well, I'm going to still feel that, but all I'm hearing is that my feelings aren't valid or my thoughts aren't valid. Or and yes, there's obviously, is there a monster in the closet? No. You try, I want to work through that, but yeah, just saying, like, just giving that blunt, it's not real, like, that doesn't really help the child process that, and ultimately often makes them just feel alone, right? More alone with that worry, which, as you said, manifests as an adult, as somebody who might not be able to express their feelings because they don't feel like their feelings are valid. And so I think there's so much power in conversations around emotions. And I've talked about this before, but Stephen So is an Instagram account that I follow, and they're great. But one of the things they talked about was that it's also important to recognize that as a parent, it's healthy to show self-regulation. So and to show feelings, right? So she uses the example, or they use the example of basically, if as a mom, if you're maybe you're a little bit kind of grouchy or short, and then if you acknowledge to say, mom has a big presentation tomorrow and I'm feeling kind of nervous. But once the presentation is over, I'm going to feel better and that feeling will go away. And to calm myself, I'm going to do some deep breathing. Or go for a walk, or they're sort of talking about those self-soothing tools about how she's going to cope with that feeling that is difficult. And so what I think is hard as parents sometimes is that we want to be those, like, adults want to be those heroes, right? We want to be the, like, we don't we're always in the good space. We're but expressing healthy regulation and saying, mom is nervous about this. I'm going to do some deep breathing and that's going to help calm me. And when this is over, which is like, in a certain amount of time, I'm going to feel better. Because that's the thing with all feelings too, right? Feelings and emotions is that we do move through them and nothing is permanent. And so reminding and teaching our children that, it's okay to feel sad, but that feeling will go away. And so again, just modeling what healthy regulation looks like, what kind of tools you will be using. And as parents, we do this, like, you probably are using, like, maybe you are frustrated from work and you go for a walk and that's your self-regulation, but we don't always teach those or hand those tools
Name it.
down. Yeah, name it.
Absolutely. I love it. So I talk about that all the time. Let your kid know when you're having a rough day and show them, what you're going to do to help get yourself through it. The kids learn better from watching us than they do from what we're telling them. So 100% model this for your kids. And even if it's an interaction with my child that's frustrating me, sometimes I just take a step back and I say, you know what, mommy's feeling really frustrated right now, and I'm just going to take a deep breath and then I'm going to try again. And that is huge, because that does a lot of things. First of all, it models self-regulation, as you talked about, which is amazing. But it also says like, oh, look, my mom was having a hard time and she maybe made a mistake, you know, you know, I say I didn't react the best way, so I'm going to try this again. And so like, you know what, it's okay. I might do that. I might not react the best way, but it's okay. I can try again. We want to show that to our kids. You know,
well, that's how you build trusting relationships, especially as an adult, right? when you can acknowledge that you've maybe fallen short in a relationship, be able to acknowledge it and do that repair. So it's so interesting because, I think there's a lot of development in this space and finding ways to help encourage your child to understand this regulation and understand like emotions and how you shift out of it, or how you might correct something that you feel that you could have done better. Just showing all of that it's teaching all the building blocks of empathy and compassion, right?
Yeah. And it builds a connection with your child that then I think fosters a better working relationship. So a lot of struggles that you might be having will diminish if you can make this sort of connection with your child, because people sometimes get hung up like, I'm so busy, I don't have time to sit down and talk about my feelings or talk about my kids' feelings all the time, right? We got to get out the door. We got to do this and that, and I have to get to work. And, you know, but I say often, like, doing this, taking this extra few minutes right now is going to save you the time in the long run. Right. Sure. Because they're going to be able to self-regulate, which is going to save you tons of time than having to sit there and calm them down and co-regulate with them. So yeah, it's so great. And as you were talking about the four questions, two things. First of all, it was reminding me, I just finished an awesome book called Soundtracks by John Acuff. It's amazing. And it's like the adult version of your book. As you're talking, I'm like, oh my goodness, this is great, because he does the same thing. He talks about these negative self-talk that we have and what he calls our soundtracks. Mm-hmm. And then he says the same thing, you know, ask these, I think he does four questions as well. I'm trying to think off the top of my head what they were, but very similar to yours. Like, what is the thought? Is it true? I think his are, is it true? Is it helpful? Yeah. And then like, you know, the last one similar to yours, like how could I change it to make it more helpful and more true? So, so similar, but yeah, the adult version, and I love it. I've been working on, he gives you then, a new soundtrack to say every morning and every evening in the mirror for 30 days. And so I'm on day 5.
Awesome.
And it's been amazing. And I just was talking to a friend the other day, and I said, yesterday, and I said, it's only been 4 days, and I was driving in the car and one of the new soundtracks just popped up in my head. Was, you know, one of his is, today is a new day and tomorrow is too. You know? Nice. And so I was driving and it just popped up in my head. And I'm like, it really is true that these thoughts that we have, we don't even realize they keep coming up. So if they're negative, it really can affect us in so many ways, in our behaviors and on our emotions and all of that. So I love that you have these four questions as part of the, like, you give an actual step-by-step process on how to go about this. I love it. And then as you were talking about that, I love to like give real practical applications. And so I was thinking this was just happened in my household last week. My 11-year-old is starting on a new soccer team. He plays travel soccer, and so he tried out for a new and more advanced team, and he made the team, and then he sort of had like a regret, you know, and he said, I don't think I want to play for this team, you know. And I was like, oh, okay, but you accepted the position and we paid the money, and you know, now we're on this team, and you know, this season is going to start, we have to go get your new uniform, and you know. And he was just, you know, digging in, I'm not going to play, you know. So it took us a bit, but we went through this process. Well, what are you thinking? Why don't you want to play? You know, and it took him, you know, lots of patience. It took him actually a full day before he was able to come up with the thought, you know. And he was able to, though, eventually express, you know, I'm going to be the worst player on this team. These players are really, really good. And, you know, I'm going to be the worst player.
Right.
And you know, and then I it was like exactly what you're saying. I said, well, how does that make you feel? You know, and he's like, I feel really, really nervous and kind of embarrassed when if I go to practice, am I going to embarrass myself? And so, you know, then we went through like, okay, well, do you really think you're the worst player on the team? And like, you know, we went through this process and I, you know, we brought up things like, you know, they did a sprint at the end of one of the practices and he won, you know, he was the fastest one. So I said, you know, you were the fastest on the team. So that must mean something, you know? And then we kind of talked through like, well, when you were on your old team, you know, when you first started 3 years ago, were you the best on the team? And he was like, no. And I'm like, oh, and then look what happened. You know, you actually graduated from that team and moved to a harder team and you tried out and you made the team, you know? So we went through this process and then we decided, he decided to, I said, what's something better that you can tell yourself when you're going to practice if you're feeling nervous? And we came up with that he's excited to learn from his, you know,
Right?
and
That's
to grow.
exactly what I was
So,
jumping to. I'm like,
yeah.
he'll get there hopefully, but that's the thing. It's like this is a great opportunity. This is a great opportunity to like level up, to learn from your teammates who are incredible. So, but it's interesting without that reframe, it's just something that's scary, right? And it's that ego, which, oh man, it can definitely get in the way. So, it's so interesting how it's honestly sometimes such a nuanced switch that you're like, right, no, actually, I'm excited that I'm going to a team where I've got a lot of opportunity to get better and to learn, right? But it's a mindset, which the goal part of the goal of this book is to really help shift to positive mindset, which when you were talking about those tapes, it actually made me think about another part of the book that I have, which is the positive thought affirmations, because very similar to that, my goal is that if we can encourage our children to do positive thought affirmations. So in the book, I have, I am kind, I am smart, I am brave, I am funny, I am strong, I am helpful, and I am loved. And I just think if we had all of our kids repeating those statements, you know, daily, like you said, making those the tapes that they have in their minds, that when, you know, because unfortunately it does happen here and there, like when they have a bad teacher who makes them feel stupid, if they've been saying, I am smart, you know, every morning for a year, then the hope is that, like, when they hear that, they're like, well, I don't think that's true, right? And so the goal is that you just get to build some of that resilience that happens internally, because I know when we had a brief chat before, we touched on like, I'm like, when I was growing up, I'm an avid gold star collector. Like I love getting positive praise. And we got a lot of that growing up, and that obviously was the model. But I think what I love about, and you need both, I will say, like, it's wonderful to have your parents praise, but I love the idea of encouraging children to build their own praise, right? You know, to know that they're valuable from their own words, the I am statements. And those I am statements can be tailored to your own child. Like you know, depending on their age, but they could be like, I am great at soccer. They're saying that every day. It's a good reminder that even when they have a bad off day, that they still believe that they are good at soccer. Like it was like, yeah, I had a bad game, but I am good at soccer. So that's okay. So
Yeah,
just
that's
trying to work
part of
through
it.
that stuff to try to remind us that we are, you know, think of those positive traits. What tapes do you have that are negative that you want to replace?
And I love that because I've also talked about what you were just mentioning about praising our kids. We talked about, you know, self-confidence and self-esteem, that it really needs to come from within. And if the kids can have these positive statements that they are saying about themselves, it can be easier then for them to find that self-confidence and not look for it outside of themselves, right? They're not going to look for everybody to be praising them. They're not going to look for all the likes on their Instagram picture because they're going to get it internally, which is a way more healthy way to get your self-esteem and self-confidence. You know,
And
and I think it, you know, of course it's wonderful to praise your children, but
of course, yeah.
I love to ask my kids like, what's the, so just keeping with the soccer theme, you know, a lot of times like after our game, I'll be like,
what's the best thing you did in that game, you know, and let him think of something first.
Yes. Instead of saying, oh, wow, like, you got that goal. Like, exactly. Right. Like, what was your proudest moment?
Yeah.
You know, let them, like you said, let them lead that conversation. And I think that's something that's brilliant to do at dinner time. Mm-hmm. You know, you can ask, like, what was the highlight of your day? Or, and that comes into the gratitude piece too, right? Like, you can mm-hmm. level that, but you're right. Get them doing that thinking versus going straight to the, like, rewarding on their side.
Yeah. Looking,
get, mm-hmm. yeah, looking for that affirmation or that positive feedback.
Yes, absolutely. I love the, you know, the way you work the book for the kids, but I think an important piece also is that the adults need to sort of practice these tools and understand yes. them before they're able to share them with their kids. So what are maybe some tips you can give to parents and teachers who will want to use your book and use these tools, but maybe they need to start with themselves first?
Yeah, I mean, you said it already. It's probably one of the biggest things that adults have a bad time with that we don't even half the time notice that we're doing it, but it's that negative self-talk that we see mm-hmm. so often, right? And so I would challenge any adult to be, like you said, watching the tapes they have, like, or where do they say, when do they sort of degrade themselves in some sort of way? Like, oh yeah, like, I, like whatever kind of thing that they say, like, oh, I'm so lazy. Like, look at how you can reframe the thoughts that you're saying, because ultimately the goal is that we're all reframing into a more positive space and that we're watching the words that we say and that we're challenging when we do hear those, like, I'm lazy. Like, are you really? Like,
right.
You know, work through what those things are so that we're not putting those ideas, to be honest, because we end up saying it around the kids that are in our lives. And I think in particular with women, sometimes it can be a lot about weight, which is not great. But just learning to have that own self-love. And so I would say for adults, like the positive thought affirmations, you can definitely create something very, much deeper than what I have for the kids version. You know, you can, like you were saying, like find what tapes you want to listen to, read those to yourself, work on the stuff that you know needs, like, it's just, to be honest, just trash thoughts, right? You're like, this is, why am I carrying this around with me? It's a useless thought that I keep playing over and over again. So working on your own stuff, just to make sure that you're actually shifting into this sort of positive thinking. And as I said, like, it's great to model it. So however you can, to show how you're working through that process. I think it can be hard sometimes to do the work. I think it's why so many of us allow ourselves to continue to suffer through, particularly some of these tapes that started when we were young, that we just carry them around. But I'm like, if we actually put time to write it down on paper, like, what's that thought? How do I want to replace that thought with something more positive? And I've actually heard that if you draw a line down a page in the middle and you write the old belief, and then you write the new belief and you actually go and cross out the old belief, that our brains are so, like, funny little things, but, like, they take that very literally. So sometimes just, like, the act of actually writing it down can make a big difference to just sort of telling yourself in your head. Like, I know journaling is a great way to help process, you know, things like trauma or just really anything that you're trying to work out. A lot of the time, just putting it pen to paper can be really helpful. It seems it's just another way of, you know, you're thinking it in your head, but you're actually also writing it. So it's like a body mind connection, but taking some time to think about the stuff that the baggage that you're carrying around can be helpful. And I'm always like, yeah, whenever you come out of, say, a boardroom meeting and you're feeling kind of terrible, I'm like, then use the refrain, a thousand thought, it's not me, it's just not. And remind yourself that, like, I'm thinking that that was terrible, but one, do I even know that anybody thought it was terrible? And two, like, it's just a thought. I was like, just let that thought go. So I would encourage them to do that piece to remind themselves when they're, and like that a refrain is meant to be something that when you start to have that, it's a trigger, you can use that refrain and remind yourself to get yourself out of it. And I have, like, in the book, I'll just do a quick part of it, but like, when my mind runs away and has mean things to say, like, I'm not cool and I look like a fool. Those thoughts are not real. That's just how I feel. A thought is a thought. It's not me. It's just not. So it's really acknowledging that, yeah, thoughts, those thoughts aren't real. So I mean, yes, it can feel very real. And that's where I'm like, I'm acknowledging that your feelings are valid, but that thought is not real. And that's where it comes back to that reset function of those four questions, because yes, like, you know, did I look like a fool? No, probably not. I'm sure people in the room too were like impressed by something you had to say. So it's, we all make choices to take whatever filters we want. But when we take a step back and actually think objectively, we can often really break down those negative thoughts.
Yeah. And it reminds me of something also I always say too, you know, after an interaction, if you're overthinking your interaction with that person or in that meeting, mm-hmm. what they thought of you, guaranteed nobody else is thinking about it anymore.
Right?
Right?
Oh man. I love, I talk about this book all the time, but The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. And he has one of the agreements is don't take anything personally. Mm-hmm. For one, that's part of it, but also like, nobody thinks about you as much as you think about you. And we just forget that, right? Like people aren't going home and thinking about you nonstop.
Right.
That's our ego that's just propping up. So it's so funny. I mean, it's hard to remember, but it's important to remember.
Yes.
And so and important. Doing the work can really help limit how often you let that ego monster crawl up.
Yes, totally. And as far as modeling for your kids, I actually released an episode. It's episode 67, if anyone wants to go back and listen to it, but just about this topic and about I had done a series of kids classes focused on saying kind things to others and to ourselves. And I really noticed that many of my students had a hard time saying something kind to themselves. And so this really like sat heavy on my heart. And I talked about modeling that for our kids and modeling positive self-talk out loud. Mm-hmm. And I know it's hard sometimes to do, but I just, as a little tip, I'm working on this myself. And so what I do is I put a bracelet on my left hand in the morning, and I have to say at least one positive thing about myself in front of my kids or my students. And then I move it over to my right hand when I do that to remind myself. So I know if I get to the end of the day and the bracelet is still on my left hand that I need to say something positive about myself in front of my kids so that I'm modeling that every single day for them.
That's so brilliant. I love that.
Yeah. I think it's important because I think way, way more often our kids hear us talking negatively about ourselves, just like you just said. Oh, my hair is disgusting. I look a mess, or, you know, like whatever it might be. I'm disorganized, you know, all those things. So yeah, model that for your kids.
It's so bad that I think so often when we get on the phone with our girlfriends and it's like, we forget we're not in a cone of silence.
Totally.
You know? You can quickly be like, oh, like I look terrible today. Like, but you're... kids can still hear you saying that.
Yeah.
Speaking directly to them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean,
even when we show up places, I find myself sometimes apologizing like, oh, don't mind how I look, you know, like I'm a mess today, this humidity, like, don't mind my hair. Like really? Like I don't need to announce that.
No.
So yeah, totally.
Well, and I even love the way that this is more of a shift in language, but there's so many tiny tweaks we can make, but when you're late, instead of being like, oh, I'm so sorry. And like, you know, it's nice to say like, well, thank you for your patience. Thanks for being patient with me. Like it's language that we don't always think about that can really help us. I know I'm really mindful of that in my business writing because I run an advertising agency. I really like to try to be mindful of not, of course, like I respect people's time. And absolutely when you're late, you want to acknowledge that, you know, thank you for your patience. But there's particularly sometimes we can really just get down that like, oh, so like such a nightmare. Like, wow, you know, like, no,
right.
Stop it.
Yes. Stop and that. I think we over apologize often, you know, for things we don't even need to apologize for so many times. So that's really a good point about just switching that language and coming at it from a different viewpoint is a great tip. I love that. Well, as a parent of children with anxiety, mm-hmm. I love that your book, you talked a little bit about cognitive behavior therapy.
Yeah.
I think it can be really helpful for parents to use as a supplement if their child is in therapy. Was that something that you thought about or you had in mind when you were writing it?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Obviously, I definitely endorse families having their children in therapy if that's needed. But I wanted to make this almost like a gateway or an early introduction. And luckily, I had spent quite a bit of time running this book through a bunch of different child therapists that I know, because it was very important to me that I made sure that I was doing, it was basic and boiled down in a safe way, that obviously my goal was to do no harm. And I mean, no one can ever guarantee any of that, but it really was important to me that I made sure that it was something that was easy enough for a parent or a guardian or a teacher to be able to navigate and add value into the child's life. But I do think it's a great supplement to therapy. I think it's something that, like I said, it's these, as anybody knows who goes to therapy, the work doesn't end in that 1 hour. It's like whatever mm-hmm. happens after that is a lot of the real work that we have to do, where we have to roll up our sleeves. We have to think about those thoughts that we're having that we need to reset. And so I think this is a really helpful supplement to that, to be able to actually put it into practice. And that's why even like when I, on my website, I've got some free worksheets, things like positive affirmations that they can do and a gratitude journal. But I'm like, this positive thinking isn't something that you talk about once. It's something that has to be embedded into your household as an ongoing piece. And I think we've talked already about a couple of opportunities, like whether it's at the dinner table or at nighttime when you're going to bed, to, you know, think about what you're grateful for within that day, or think about some positive, like what was the highlight of your day? What are you most proud of? All those things help ladder up into that, like you were talking about, that healthy self-esteem space, which is what we want. And we want all of us in the household doing that on a regular basis, because like you said, it doesn't particularly help that much if the parents are modeling negative self-talk while they're trying to tell their child to speak kindly to themselves. So yes. It's a whole household message. And that's also why when I wrote it, I wanted, like, it's kind of looks different from other children illustrations. I mean, it's an illustrated children's book, but I wanted it to be appealing to as many age ranges as possible, because I think the message is timeless. And I think that we can get really caught in our own thoughts. And at any point we can need that challenge to remind us.
It's great. I think it, the resource for parents and teachers is incredible, because like I said, as a person who been in therapy myself and then have had children in therapy, you're right, the work is not getting done in 1 hour a week or 1 hour a month. And often when your child is in therapy, they're in, you know, you may have times where you have the, you know, you're included in the session, but oftentimes you're in the waiting room or you're outside the room and they're doing that work with the therapist. And so it can be hard sometimes for the parent to know then how to support the child in the time at home where you're in the trenches of it and, you know, mm-hmm. the day to day. So I think this is a great resource for that. I think I absolutely love it. I mean, I can't wait to get my hands on a physical copy of it and to use it with my own kids at home, but to use it in my classes, because it's so fabulous. Have you gotten any messages from people who have started using it yet? And
yeah, one of a school board actually just added it to their anxiety toolkit, which I'm very excited about. So some teachers have been using it and giving me great feedback. The naming the emotion worksheet basically has a variety of different emotions. And one of them was like, can we get that worksheet? But like the kids have to fill in the different emotions. It's like, yes, of course. So I've made that tool for the classroom. But yeah, the feedback has been really great, that it's opening up conversations and it's helping them work through stuff. And what I really love is like kids really enjoy the positive affirmations. So a lot of them have either been writing their own, there is the printed version they can do, but I've seen people sending me pictures of their kids writing in their journal the I am statements and coming up with their own, which I was like, that's brilliant. That's what we want, right? We want them to be able to come up with their own positive thoughts. So the feedback has been really good. And I know, which has been a good reminder that I know a lot of parents are wait lists to get into therapy. And I've had a lot of different therapists say like, this is a great tool mm-hmm. for parents who are waiting to get into therapy as well, that this can help in the interim as a stopgap while they get into therapy. So obviously it's a great tool after they're in therapy, but they're like, this is something I'll be recommending as they're getting people on their wait list, because right now child anxiety is super high. And I think social anxiety is something we're going to see a lot of, because this has been a very bizarre past year and everything's been changing. And as we know, especially with anxious children, that we like things to stay the same.
We'd like to know what to expect.
Surprises. We don't like change. So It's going to be a challenging year for lots of kids as they try to figure out this as things are changing, right? It's
Yes.
it's hard. So I think we're going to see a lot of that next year. And I'm just hoping that, you know, my book and conversations that parents are having and the work that they're putting in will be helpful. And I didn't talk much about the breathwork exercises in the book, but I do feel like what I wanted is to give kids tools that they could use anywhere. And breathwork is one in particular. As somebody who grew up and had a lot of test anxiety, a lot of test anxiety, I swear I probably didn't like take any breaths while I was writing a test. But yeah, you know, you tense up and you're just holding your breath. But like, if you start to make that a habit, that you can teach them how to self-regulate with breathwork, and like even just starting before, like as you get the test, doing a few good deep breaths will help just calm that nervous system as they start that test. And I don't know if you remember that, but I sure do. Like the moment the test got dropped on my desk, I was like
that racing heart and
yeah
totally. I think I love teaching breath work for that reason, because it's the most accessible and portable form of stress management that we have. So I love that you include all of these resources in the book. I mean, it's just treasures. It's great, really, really great. And you have also resources on your website and everything. So where can everybody find the book and find all the resources to go along with it?
Yeah, you can find the book. Well, my website is athoughtisathought.com. And then if you look on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, or it's now carried, I think, on Target Online. It's in Canada. You can get it at Indigo. So there are lots. I think most book distributors carry it. So you can look for it there. And then you can also purchase it through my website, again, athoughtisathought.com. And that's where you'll find those free worksheets. There's also a lot of information that if you are new to cognitive behavioral therapy, I've got a video embedded that gives you some outline around like what that is, which can help, again, set some examples. If you're looking to sort of understand how to do that exercise in a deeper way, there's definitely information under my website that can help with that. But there's lots of cool tools. I mean, as somebody who's tried a lot of different things, I've got a lot of, you know, I talk about affirmations, talk about gratitude, I talk about tapping. I've got a lot of different ideas for parents who do have anxious children, even how to speak to your child. So it is a good place to go if you're looking for some ideas on how to cope with an anxious child. And I will say, as somebody who grew up with it, I'm really taking that to heart, that I'm like, what is and would be helpful for me, and how would it been valuable to be for me to have been spoken to? So I'm really taking all of that into consideration as somebody, again, who has definitely come to a better place with managing my anxiety, but I'm very conscious that I basically need my handy toolkit to keep me keeping positive and not getting out into those worried thoughts. So that's,
I love it.
Yeah.
I love when we can take our biggest struggle and turn it into our biggest passion, right? That seems what you have done in a the most amazing and beautiful way. So congratulations. It's just so great. Where can we also connect with you on social media?
Yes, I have a handle at A Thought is a Thought. I basically am on Facebook, on Instagram as A Thought is a Thought. And then I also, as if you're looking for just advice, or I've been sharing a lot of stuff around self-love, around anxiety, around anxiety management, on Nikki Hedstrom, the Instagram handle and Facebook page as well. So I'm also on Twitter as Nikki Hedstrom. So if you're looking for that, I really am doing everything I can for my own personal growth, to continue to challenge my own negative thoughts and share that journey as I'm working through it. But happy to always share it. Any other tips that are helpful to others. So I'm just constantly sharing what's working for me, what's not working for me, with the goal of generally reducing our human suffering from our thoughts. Because man, we just do it to ourselves. We need to stop. So.
Yes. Yes. Well, thank you for getting this mission going. I'm right there with you. I think it's so important, and I cannot thank you enough for joining me today. It was so great talking with you. Let's stay in touch.
Absolutely. And Kelly, thank you so much for having me. It was so much fun. It's always fun to talk to somebody who also has experienced anxiety, because we just get each other.
Yes. So,
I definitely appreciate it. It's always fun to chat. So happy to chat anytime.
Great.
Thank you for joining me on my mission to spread peace and joy by introducing children and families to the power of yoga and mindfulness. I could not achieve this goal without all of you listening and trying these tips with the kids in your life. If you enjoyed this episode and found it helpful, please subscribe and leave me a review. If you would also suggest this podcast to parents and teachers, I would be so grateful. If you would like to connect with me, you can find me on Instagram at Mindful Moments for Families and on Facebook at Kidding Around Yoga with Kelly. For more information on my offered programs, such as yoga classes for children and adults, workshops and professional development, and corporate chair yoga, visit my website at kiddingaroundyoga.com/Kelly. I'll see you all here on our next episode, but in the meantime, remember, take a deep breath.